Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Traffic cameras in Ohio, they're used to monitor red light runners, but they are also used in other states to catch speeders. Supporters of the cameras say they make our roads safer. Critics see them as a questionable source of revenue for some local governments and possibly unconstitutional. Now, the Ohio General Assembly could have enough votes and the governor's support to shut them down in the Buckeye State. A recent study by the University of Tennessee examined the dilemmas of traffic cameras. Joining us now is one of the authors of that study, Dr. Lee Hahn. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
So tell us what the study looked at, what you examined.
We mainly look at the technology or technical side of traffic camera and how they are implemented in the field. Basically, when some of the traffic engineers were feeling pressured to somehow generate more revenues to pay for the camera's system, they have to do something that can be construed as not ethical in order to lure more people to either run a red light or speed or such to generate revenue. So we're trying to look at what are the safety concerns of that and if something like that is even possible.
What did you find?
Well, we found out that there are some lawsuits that actually alleged that their yellow lights were reduced from 4 seconds to 3 seconds and things like that. So people will be running red light and paying the hefty fine. Mm-hmm. And there were some lawsuits and some of the cities lost. And my purpose there was looking at how not smart to do something like that. Not only you jeopardize the safety of the motorists, you could be risking much bigger lawsuits of millions of dollars potentially if you get people injured or even killed. But also I look at some other possibilities of you can do something more cleverly that would not be as obvious and would not be as much impact on safety.
Now, the idea of shortening the yellow light, that means that the green light goes on faster too, right?
The green light, you can leave the green light, not changing it, and it's just swapping for a second or two of yellow light to red light. So red light comes on earlier, and some people are used to have an extra couple seconds to run the yellow light. They actually bump into the red light.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Lee Hahn from the University of Tennessee. He's one of the authors of a new study examining the operation of traffic cameras and how they can be used to generate more revenue. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Why was it found to be less safe to shorten the yellow light then?
Basically, for the operational speed of vehicles and how much time for people to react to an onset of a yellow light and then red light and the distance for them to stop, you need a certain amount of yellow light duration for people to react and come to a stop or clear the intersection. By tweaking those numbers, by playing with the yellow light, you are going to have a situation that the motorists would be caught in something called a dilemma zone. Whether they go crossing intersection or try to stop, they couldn't do either. And they will be caught in the middle of the intersection when your cross traffic starts to go and then you're in trouble.
Who were you doing the study for? Was it for the companies, the private vendors that sell these traffic cameras, or was it for cities that are using them?
No, neither. It's okay. Actually under U.S. Department of Transportation's Southeastern Transportation Center, and our goal and objective is to increase the safety of in general for motorists. So this is a grant to look at such studies, such a situation.
Does the safetiness of the length of the yellow light depend on the speed along the road at the time? In other words, if it's in a 25-mile-per-hour zone, it's different than if it's in a 45-mile-per-hour zone?
Yes, most definitely. And also it depends on the how far you have to travel to cross the intersection. So it's specific to the intersection.
And how common is it that these vendors or the cities that use the cameras, how common is it for them to shorten the yellow light? Is it that common?
I don't think it's that common. Mm-hmm. I think it would be extremely, stupid to do something like that.
Hmm.
It's just so obviously wrong. It's blatantly wrong. But there have been several lawsuits. If you just Google it, you can find out. And there are at least the two cities were lost, namely in the lawsuit, and then lost and had to give the money back to those motorists who were cited speeding or running the red light.
Mm-hmm. If based on your research and the changes to public policy regarding these kinds of lights, or these kind of cameras, I should say, do you see that red light cameras could be managed in a safe and sustainable way?
In a way, there are cities. I think Columbus has made $8.5 million off it, so they must be able to do something that's sustainable. The issue is really something like this is successful. Red light camera program should be so successful, people would stop running red light, and really the funds should dry up if people are learning what they should be learning.
Right. I mean, eventually, but there's always a new generation of drivers scaring us on the road.
That's right. There's always a supply of new drivers.
Not mentioning any names. But that could be a function as too. Did you look at all whether or not signage helped?
No, I did not. The purpose was not looking into that. But you are right. Some of the signage were almost. This is I was a person speaking. Some of the signage are purposely made small and very wordy, so you almost don't have opportunity when you drive by to see this advanced sign that, oh, there's a traffic camera down the road and all that. I don't know if that's the purpose.
How common, again, is the concept of shortening a yellow light? You're saying it's not common that you were looking at if
it's
they
not
did
common.
It's not common.
No. Yeah, it's not common. It shouldn't be. And that's one of the purpose of the study is looking at some other ways that I kind of trying to make this paper on one hand to chastise some of the traffic engineers that shortening the yellow light. It's so as I said, not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other ways to do it. But on the other hand, I published so the public, the watchdogs can realize that there are other ways to do this, and you should be on the lookout for it. For instance, if I shorten the entire cycle length, so if the cycle, basically you go from green to yellow to red and come back to green, that's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
If I shorten the entire cycle from, say, 2 minutes to 1 minute, I would have twice as many of cycles in an hour. That means I have twice many of opportunities for motorists to run into yellow light and then red light. So I potentially can double of chances for people to run a red light.
Without necessarily shortening the yellow light.
Yeah, without touching the yellow light length. Yeah.
Just have a shorter green light.
To reduce the entire cycle length. For instance, it could be 120 seconds going from the starting of the green to the starting of a green again. But now I shorten it in half. And I have twice as many chances for people to run the red light, the beginning of the red light. Yeah.
Do you know if any municipalities have adopted this strategy?
No, I don't know if any of that. initially came up with about 12 strategies, and we published 5 of them. And I'm basically waiting for other researchers to observe this kind of situation and the report. It would be, to me, it would be fun to see who are doing all this and if the public are catching on to them.
What are some other strategies that you recommended?
One of them was related to some sort of randomness in your overall cycle length or even yellow time. So if it's deemed safe to have yellow light to be 4 seconds, instead of shortening it, you can change it between, say, 4 seconds and 6 seconds. So people are confused. They don't really know. This sounds really evil, and you know, but if you start throwing this kind of curve at people, then they don't know. After a while, they might be confused and do something about, you know, running the they might run red light because they're confused. Mm-hmm. Yet you're still on the safe side without actually being sued because, hey, the yellow light is always exceeding the required safe length.
And the whole idea here, in proponents of the camera lights would say, or the red light cameras or the speeding cameras, whatever they are, would say the idea is to make these intersections safer.
Yes, that's usually the argument.
And so if you make motorists more cautious, more wary, instead of kind of robotically going through intersections like they often do. That's the idea.
Yes. In theory, that would work, but that also explains why it's so hated, because not a lot of people enjoy commute, and you're just adding more to this whole dreary task. So, and also, this Big Brother situation is not really welcomed by a lot of people. But I think it's being used in such a way, it's generating so much revenue, it becomes, for some cases, a monster, needing more and more. Yet when people learn not to run it, so some clever ways have come up to sustain the program.
Have you noted, well, in Columbus at least, a lot of the crosswalks are timed now. So if you're approaching in traffic, you can see that there's still 14 seconds on the crosswalk. You know you have plenty of time.
Yeah.
Are those, look at those?
Actually, not in this study, but mm-hmm. I have several papers published in other studies. Those, they call the countdown timers, are very popular in many other parts of the world before U.S. Adopt them. U.S. is usually slow in adopting this kind of safety-related technologies just to be safe. And a lot of those places early on is helpful, but then later on they actually help people time their acceleration into intersection in the beginning of the green or some other ways. So there are mixed results, if they are safer, if they are better.
Okay. Well, Dr. Lee Han, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Lee Han, he is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Tennessee and one of the authors of a new study examining the dilemmas of traffic cameras. Coming up, we're going to hear the pros and cons about the traffic cameras. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about red light cameras in Ohio. The Ohio General Assembly may now have enough votes and the governor's support to effectively ban their use in Ohio. The Ohio Supreme Court is considering arguments about their constitutionality. Opponents of the cameras say they're a cash cow for the municipalities that use them, with little evidence of increased safety. And they claim that without human monitoring, they remove an element of due process from the judicial system. Supporters say they can save lives. Joining us now is a senior vice president for research at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, Anne McCart. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also joining us is the director of communications for the National Motorists Association, John Bowman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
John Bowman, as far as motorists' rights go, what are the legal rights at stake that some believe are being violated with use of the cameras?
Well, there are a whole range of constitutional and due process rights that come into play when people receive camera tickets, notably the fact that when they go into court and try to defend themselves, they don't have the right to face their accuser because their accuser is actually a camera. So how do you do that? Typically, camera cases are held in administrative settings and not in actual courts of law. And as a result, the normal rules of evidence and due process procedure don't apply. So these things really put the motorist at a disadvantage when they're trying to defend themselves in these cases.
And McCart, as far as the research goes at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, can we talk about what we know about how much safety is brought about by having the cameras?
Yes, we've done a series of studies that show in several communities that red light cameras reduce red light running violations substantially. Our most recent study in Arlington, Virginia, found that the longer after the light turned red, reductions were bigger. So, for example, reductions were the biggest when it was 1.5 seconds into the red phase versus only a half second. We've also done studies looking at the crash benefits of red light cameras. And our research is consistent with other studies that are have rigorous methods. And what we have found is that red light cameras are highly effective at reducing crashes, and this includes fatal crashes. So we did a study in 2011 that found that communities using red light cameras, using red light cameras, reduced fatal red light running crash rate by 24%. So we believe the evidence is quite clear when it's based on well-conducted, sound, rigorous studies that red light cameras reduce violations, as you would expect, and reduce crashes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about red light cameras today in Ohio. Tell us what you think. Are you a supporter of red light cameras? Do you question their effectiveness, or do you question their use and your rights as a motorist? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. John Bowman, according to a 2012 data from the city of Columbus, which of course uses the cameras and obviously, you know, is a beneficiary of them. But anyways, according to that data, intersections with red light cameras saw a 70% decrease in traffic accidents related to light running. Given those numbers, from your point of view, do motorists have a right to be safer too?
Motorists absolutely have a right to be safer. And in fact, I think it's important to go back and look at the studies that we've been talking about and look at kind of the special interests that are behind those studies. In fact, the 2011 study from the Insurance Institute has been rigorously reviewed by other academics. And in fact, they found when they conducted a reanalysis of that data, they found that red light cameras have no impact on fatal red light running. And in fact, in a preliminary analysis they did of that data, they found that the cameras actually increased fatal red light running by about 25%. So you can argue studies all day long. For every study that they claim showing the cameras are a benefit, there's another third-party peer-reviewed study that shows they have no benefit or a net safety deficit. So to look at studies doesn't really tell you what goes on in the real world. And when you look at what you can do with common engineering practices at intersections, most notably increasing the duration of the yellow light times, you can achieve substantial reductions in violations and accidents without cameras. So I think if you look at what you can do without cameras, you'll find that that's far more effective, it's cheaper, and it's easier to accomplish.
John Bowman, do we know why some studies show an increase in red light running with the cameras? What's the impetus, or what's behind that?
I think that it's probably reflects the interests of the people who are behind the studies. And like I say, when you look at the academic, the unbiased third-party studies, they almost always show a net increase in accidents, most notably of the rear-end type of accidents, which can be quite serious. But overall, they say, cameras don't really do that much. In fact, we don't recommend pursuing them as sound public policy.
Ann McCart, I know your organization is a research organization, does not lobby and does not advocate, but does the insurance industry have a dog in this race, so to speak? Is there, what would the benefits be to the insurance industry to have the red light cameras if they don't work?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. There's some misconceptions about insurers. In most states, red light running violations are not recorded on driver records. Some states even go so far as to say they can't be used by insurers. So insurers, again, in most places don't have access to information that a driver got a red light running ticket. In terms of crashes, I think, again, there's a misunderstanding about how the insurance business works. I should say we're not involved in the insurance business. We're funded by insurers. But basically, insurers do better when crashes go down because they're paying out less in claims. So, and back to some of the points that John made, it's just simply not true that the stronger studies have found increases. An international review of the better conducted studies found a reduction in injury crashes, no significant increase in rear end crashes. I think a lot of this is common sense. When people run red lights, they can cause serious crashes. 700 people died in 2012 in crashes where someone ran a red light. Traffic laws are enforced, people obey them. Red light cameras lead people not to run red lights. So I think it's common sense to expect a safety benefit, and that's what you see over and over again.
Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, and good morning to your panel. I have both good and bad experiences with the cameras. There's many here in Columbus on Henderson Road. There's one on Maple Canyon, Bush Boulevard. Trust me, I get to see it all the time. I've gotten maybe two or three tickets from these cameras. And the biggest downside is if you're not in the car, and I say I lend my car, which is what has happened many times, to somebody else, I'm getting the ticket even though they did the infraction. And in some cases, I'm watching how the camera's taking a picture, especially the one on Maple Canyon. The person hasn't crossed that white line that you're supposed to not cross, and it's taking a picture. They maybe touched the white line, and it's taking a picture. So some of these cameras are trigger happy. They're taking pictures. The person did not cross the red line. They did not turn right on red. But I'm watching them because I see the benefit, but I also see so many errors, me personally, that I didn't do anything, and I'm getting a ticket for $92. And by the way, I've yet to pay one single of these tickets because I've argued them every single time and won. So as an objective person, not pro or against either one of these, I have to say that it's an expensive little tool to put up there that may scare some people from crossing the red line, but at the same time, it creates a lot of hassle for the people like me who really didn't do an infraction, but they're being accused of something they really did do. And I have no problem paying a ticket if I do something. But in those three cases, on Henderson Road, I touched the white line and took a picture. Maple Canyon, mm-hmm. and I didn't know what are they talking about when I got the ticket. So I'll close the phone and listen to your discussion. But thank you for your show.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for the call. To what extent do we know that that is happening? That people are not the ones behind the wheels, but they're getting the tickets like Paul in Worthington, John Bowman.
We hear from our members all the time about cases like this, and if you look up on the news on Google, you'll find that this is a huge issue with red light cameras, since in most states, red light cameras don't actually take a picture of the person driving the vehicle. It's assumed that that person is the registered owner of the vehicle. So even if they're not driving, they receive the ticket in the mail a couple weeks after the incident, and now it's up to them to either go in and prove that they were not driving somehow, or they can be compelled to point the finger at the person who was driving, and yet they may not know. You know, they may have a car in the household that a lot of people drive, could be kids going out at night or whatever, mm-hmm. so they may legitimately not know who was driving the car at that point, yet they're still on the hook for that. So that's a big problem. And the other problem that Paul mentioned as far as these sorts of technical violations, people, you know, stopping a little bit over the line and things like that. Mm-hmm. Again, they're very common, and it's the bread and butter for the ticket camera industry right there.
Yeah, Ann McCart, what about accuracy? Do we know how truly, in the best sense, accurate, not getting people, you know, nabbing them and trapping them, but actually accurately reflecting what happened at that intersection at that point in time?
Well, you hear a lot of claims by opponents of cameras pointing to these kind of, as you referred to them, technical violations. But in fact, there really isn't any solid evidence about how common these problems are. In the communities that we've studied, where we filmed intersections for our study independent of the cameras, we found that the programs were being conducted in terms of what you might call the best practices. So although you hear this, again, there's no solid evidence about the extent of how often these technical problems are present.
Paul from Worthington also mentioned the issue of having to, even though he knew he wasn't guilty of anything, he has to show up at this administrative hearing and prove it. And he has so far hasn't had to pay a ticket. And he said that was a hassle to him. But a lot of people don't have even the resources to go through the hassle of it. They just have to pay the ticket because they can't take off work or something like that. John Bowman, have you heard very many complaints along those lines?
Well, certainly. I mean, it's a hassle anytime anyone has to go in to fight one of these tickets. And in fact, I think Paul was the exception in that he's gotten three of them dismissed. So he's done very well. Again, these administrative hearings are not really set up to favor the rights of the defendant. They're very much set up to be rubber stamp procedures where, the hearing officer is the one who prevails and you end up paying your ticket on the way out. I think Paul did very well there. To go back to something that Ann had talked about as far as, again, getting back to the study information, mm-hmm. I think it's important, at least with that Arlington study that she mentioned, that study also found that 90% of the violations happened in the first 1.4 seconds of the red light signal phase. So if you would go back to that intersection and simply increase the duration of the yellow light slightly by half a second or a second, which is one of the primary engineering interventions in these situations, you can drastically reduce the number of red light violations right on the spot. And those reductions are lasting, meaning that people obey that longer yellow light, and that's the most effective way to increase intersection safety, reduce the number of violations, and reduce the number of accidents.
Do they really obey the light better, though? Don't they just, over time, get more accustomed to the length of the light and know what they can get away with?
There isn't much evidence to support that at all.
I'd like to weigh in here, too, because I agree that yellow signal timing is important, and it was some of the Institute's research that led to the current guidelines that communities follow. But we put this hypothesis to a test at some intersections in Philadelphia, where we worked with the city first to increase the yellow signal timing. We looked at red light running violations before and after that and did find a decrease. And then we added red light cameras, worked with the city to add cameras, and what we found was a much bigger decrease. So at some intersections, red light running violations were essentially eliminated. So we are definitely we definitely support communities having adequate yellow signal timings. But what our study shows is that there are intersections where that change is not sufficient to prevent all drivers from running red lights.
And John,
I can tell you that in that case, first of all, there are cities that have lengthened the timing of their yellow lights at red light camera intersections. Notably, Loma Linda, California, added 1 second to their yellow light times. They dropped the violation rates by 92%. That intervention was so effective that they completely got rid of their red light cameras years ago, and they have received that ongoing safety benefit ever since. There's an issue with the fact that many yellow light times are deficient to begin with, meaning that they don't meet any kind of engineering standards. So by simply lengthening those yellow lights up to the established standards, you can have a huge impact on safety. So we're talking about raising deficient yellow light times up, really give people enough time to make it either through the intersection or to stop safely before the intersection.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We will continue our conversation about red light cameras in Ohio when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Red light cameras could be on their way out in the Buckeye State. The battle over their use in Ohio is currently being fought out in the State House, but it looks like there's probably a majority of Ohio lawmakers who support banning them, the use of them. Actually, the legislation wouldn't ban the use of red light cameras. It would create circumstances that would make them unaffordable for most municipalities to use them. Opponents say the cameras violate certain legal rights and provide a questionable source of revenue for municipalities. Supporters cite their ability to prevent accidents at busy intersections. Still with us is Anne McCart. She's Senior Vice President of Research at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Also with us is John Bowman, Director of Communications for the National Motorists Association. What do you think out there? Should we have red light cameras? Should we amend how we use them? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Red light cameras are supplied by private vendors, and the cities pay to use them. If the cameras deter more and more drivers, there's a question about whether that affects the ability of cities to pay for them and whether they're kind of put themselves out of business. Anne McCart, do you see through your research a day when the cameras would put themselves out of business?
Well, we haven't studied the implementation issues, but yes, I think in communities where red light cameras are effective, there may come a point when they're no longer needed. I mean, the purpose of a red light camera program is to deter people from running red lights, and programs have been quite effective. So if they're not needed, if yellow signal timing or another change to an intersection or cameras can eliminate red light running, then I would say that that program has been a success.
Jonathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. The comment is I think we're all going to have to get used to seeing cameras in public locations and dealing with the constitutionality of that. But the question is, isn't there a distinction between running a red light straight and running a red light at a rolling, like a rolling red right turn? I have a manual shift car, and I was recently at an intersection with a camera, and I did a rolling red turn where the camera said I was going 12 miles an hour through the right turn. And there's no other traffic in view, and there's no question that a human officer wouldn't have charged me with a crime in this spot. I was doing the safe thing instead of stopping and blocking up the traffic behind me. So, but I paid the ticket because I didn't want to deal with it. And I'll hear whatever you have to say off the air. Thank you.
Okay. John Bowman, the rolling red stop problem?
It's a great point. In fact, most red light camera programs make the bulk of their revenue off of these slow rolling right turn maneuvers by drivers, which, by the way, pose an infinitesimal risk of getting into an accident. And as the caller said, most cops would not ticket for that move, and it's a way to actually keep traffic moving. You know, as long as you're yielding to any oncoming traffic or pedestrians in the crosswalk, there really isn't much of a safety issue there. Yet, in some cases around the country, cities are earning, you know, 65% to 70% of their revenue off of these types of moves. In some cases, the people who are reviewing the tickets will judge that, yeah, that was a slow enough or a safe enough maneuver, we're not going to ticket for that. So there is some discretion on the part of the people reviewing these, but in many cases, they do ticket those, and it's extremely profitable for the red light camera companies as well as the cities that are operating the cameras.
It's not as much of a safety issue with a rolling stop, but the fact is, it's the law. If there's a stop sign or a red light, you're supposed to stop and then proceed with caution to make that
Certainly.
Right-hand turn. Yeah. It is the law, and it's already doled out unfairly, or I shouldn't say unfairly, but imbalance and without balance. Some people do get tickets from police officers when they see them come to a rolling red stop, even when there's no traffic. Maybe it's the end of the month and they have a quota.
There are studies also, you know, I'm old enough to remember when we first began to have ride on red in this country, and there were very sound studies that found that allowing right turns did increase pedestrian and bicyclist collisions in particular. So it's not the case that right turn on red violations cannot be dangerous, again, especially to pedestrians and bicyclists. And just to pick up on the point, too, I think it is important, even with the straight-through violations, we're talking about enforcing the law. So, you know, if some of these implementation issues, if people don't want to appeal the ticket or whatever, then obeying the law is a good way to avoid some of the hassle of the camera tickets.
John Bowman, I wanted to get back to the issue of due process, the right to face, and the idea of the right to face your accuser, which is really clearly an issue in Ohio, where the legislation would require a police officer at every intersection where there's a red light camera to confirm the camera's conclusions, I guess. And when the idea of due process was conceived back in the day, there was no such thing as a stoplight, let alone a red light camera. And is it practical that, or is just useless redundancy at that point to have a officer at a red light camera intersection?
Well, I don't think in the best of all worlds you would ever have an officer monitoring every red light equipped intersection anyway. So there is sort of a false argument there. But certainly there is a due process issue. And it comes back to the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, which gives defendants the right to face their accusers. It's called the Confrontation Clause. And that's an idea that stretches back, of course, hundreds of years. And so the idea is to give that person a chance to question their accuser and to really find out what's going on in their case. Now, of course, when the accuser is a camera, there is no practical way to do that. And some court decisions have basically said, no big deal. In fact, the California Supreme Court just came back with a decision that said basically because the camera is the one essentially generating the evidence, the Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause does not apply in this case. And so that was a real blow to the rights of motorists all over the place when that came down.
Ann McCart, what about that right? And I know that's not your bailiwick necessarily, but
actually, our attorneys have studied and tracked the cases on cameras, and the basic U.S. constitutionality of automated enforcement has been upheld. That's really not up for debate anymore. What you see are state cases that focus more on more narrowly on state issues. But the basic constitutionality of automated enforcement is established.
Paul and Bexley, you're on the air. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. My thought was if we're going to have these cameras, and I think they're legitimate, why not require, though, that the cities, municipalities, are the ones that administer and run the whole thing rather than putting it into a third-party operation. When you do that, just like with the prison industry, you end up with a lot of outside pressure and lobbying that can change a lot of conceptions and the way the laws are written and all that. It just seems kind of ridiculous to allow companies to profit from this type of situation with the municipalities, cities, and counties, whoever uses those.
And you mean when you're talking about prisons, you're talking about private prisons?
Yeah, private prisons.
That profit
to
from.
To do things like that, we should administer it ourselves as a government and as the commons, not as a profit-making center for private corporations.
John Bowman, has that come up as a factor in this discussion?
It does. In fact, when you have private companies involved with these sorts of operations, transparency and accountability to the public really goes out the window. There's a great example right now with one of the main suppliers of red light cameras, a company known as Redflex. They're embroiled in a $2 million bribery scandal right now with the city of Chicago, and that scandal could actually spread to other cities as well. So, like I say, the non-transparency, lack of accountability. In fact, in Chicago, an audit found that the city had generated $500 million in camera revenues over 11 years, and yet they could provide absolutely no justification for a safety benefit associated with those cameras. So what does that tell you?
Paul, thank you for that call. And Taylor in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was just that I think that the red light cameras actually kind of encourage running red lights because, like, when I come up to a light that I know has a camera and it turns yellow, I know that if I don't stop by the time that line happens, like, I better get through all the way or I'm going to get a ticket. So it kind of encourages me, like, if I see that light turn yellow, to kind of give it more gas just so that I know that, my license plate's not going to be in the field of view. So I don't know if anybody has any research on that, but that's just kind of my opinion.
Anne McCart has, and not only that, just to piggyback on what Taylor said, is there a problem with people being confused at the intersections and causing accidents that way? Either by speeding up or not doing, I don't know. I've been confused before, but I've never gotten a ticket.
Again, I think some of these the comments are sort of anecdotal, but mm-hmm. when we have studied, in really well-designed studies where we look at intersections with cameras, without cameras, what we found is that violations go down. So I think that's the bottom line, is that violations go down, including violations that occur longer after the light has turned red. In terms of confusion, I think that we would agree that it's important to get public support, that the program be transparent, that signs alert drivers to cameras, that there be publicity, not just that there are cameras there, but to try to explain to the public the problem of red light running and the safety problem the cameras are addressing. I think all these steps go a long way toward getting support for cameras. Although when we've done survey after survey in communities with cameras, we found that the majority of drivers support them.
Dr. Lee Hahn from the University of Tennessee said that signage is a big problem, that it's often small and difficult to read, especially when you're approaching an intersection, especially at the point of a yellow light. John Bowman, has that been a problem as well, just the signage associated with and the operation associated with the red light cameras, speeding cameras?
It can be. A lot of it depends on how the initial statutes are set up that mm-hmm. enable the cameras, what the signage requirements are. And granted, yeah, they do help. I think any warning that you can give a driver of what's upcoming is is in the best interest of everybody. Want to comment, though, on the whole public opinion issue. Mm-hmm. Just saw a survey the other day from a polling group called Ask Ohio about red light cameras, and they found that 51% of Ohioans support a camera ban, and only 39% would oppose that ban. In addition, when the public is allowed to vote on cameras, say through a ballot initiative, the cameras lose 90% of the time. There have been 28 cities that have had ballot initiatives, or excuse me, 31 cities that have had ballot initiatives, and 28 times the cameras have lost. So I would say that the public opinion in terms of cameras, it's much more in favor of opposing cameras.
And John Bowman, are there circumstances where your organization, the National Motorist Association, sees speeding cameras or red light cameras as beneficial certain intersections, certain places at all? Or are you in favor of an outright ban on them across the board?
There is no benefit to the public of any type of photo enforcement, whether it be red light cameras or speed cameras.
And when you talk about the National Motorist Association, who are your constituents? Who do you represent? Who pays your paycheck, I guess?
Mm-hmm, you're right. The National Motorist Association is a membership-based organization. We're a grassroots organization, meaning anybody can join us. We're primarily funded through the dues and donations of our members. We do receive some funding through our website advertising and things like that, but we don't have any special interests behind us. We don't have any corporations that support us. So we are a wholly grassroots type of an organization.
And why would I join your organization?
Well, if you believe that drivers' rights are important, if you want to be able to travel and be subjected only to traffic laws that are fair and reasonable, to a court process that recognizes due process, to be free of things like red light cameras and speed cameras, to maintain your privacy and a whole range of issues, then you would want to consider joining us. Our website is www.motorists, which is plural, .org.
And Ann McCart, I wanted to go back to a comment you made about the fact that the debate's over with when it comes to the constitutionality of the use of traffic cameras. Why is the debate over? Is it just because the courts have ruled? It hasn't gone all the way up the food chain yet, has it?
Because courts, time after time, have ruled on the U.S. constitutionality of cameras. So what you see, again, is in state cases now are focusing on the individual state issues rather than the U.S. constitutional issues.
So, John Bowman, do you see it as a done deal? I mean, obviously you don't. You're still arguing along those lines, right?
We are, in fact, and I believe that the case that is going to be argued before the Ohio Supreme Court today is focusing on those due process issues. So I don't think the constitutionality has been settled at all.
We have an email. Okay, I guess we don't. So anyways, I want to thank my guests, Ann McCart. She's Senior Vice President for Research at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also John Bowman, Director of Communications for the National Motorist Association. John, thanks as well to you.
Thanks very much.
And thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Olivia Rojas, Justin English, Emmy Beach, Julia Hyder and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me on Twitter too at Ann Fisher WOSU. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.